No, no. We, well, I'll talk about that in my update.
Okay. Okay, so I guess we have everybody here. So it's a minute after four, so let's call the meeting to order. And first, because we have two new commissioners, let me just ask everyone to go around real fast, just quick introduction, so everyone knows who everyone is.
I'm Trenton Bird. Introduction, I've lived on Bainbridge Island now for about 8 years. And I have two small boys, 4 and a half and 1 year, 1 and a half. And I was looking to make sure that this city stays the paradise that I believe that I found when I moved here.
Okay, great.
Kathy Dunn, and I'm fourth generation Bainbridge Island. And my son was a cadet and reserve officer for the Bainbridge Police Department. And I'm just really excited to be in the committee. I was so nervous when I had the interview. I hadn't been interviewed for anything in 10 years. And I was just, and Doug is really nice to interview with, but my heart was just beating. He was so nice. It was just like we were in a living room having a conversation. And when he called, I was really excited. And I do know the chief.
Matthew Hamner, chief of police. David Giles, I think you sat in on the
Amber Richards, I'm the Secretary Chief Examiner.
And Rich Daniels, Commission Member, twice retired from the Coast Guard and from the Sheriff's Office in L.A. Lived here on the island since 2009. And most recently came from L.A. I was in Alaska and Juneau and Kodiak before that, so I'm picking a retirement point. I couldn't get the wife to go quite all the way back to Alaska for the first time.
Rob Killian, I'm another commission member, been on board the commission, I guess, going on 3 years now. Used to be an Austin, Texas police officer, and then worked for the state police, and the Narcotics Bureau and White Collar Crime Bureau for a little while, and then I was in the Navy, doing intelligence work. And then we've been here on the island about 4 years, and raising two kids and 6 months.
Okay.
Can I just add that the chair, Ed Alex, is not present at the meeting, and so the vice chair will be chairing the meeting. Rich Daniels.
Okay, and thank you. And yeah, I did talk to Ed. He's in LA as we speak, and I'll actually be joining him in the morning. So he's closing out at the sale of the house there and moving some things, and we'll be back on the island over the weekend. First order of business, just a matter of putting on the record any mid-month activity that we've been involved in terms of communications or activities on behalf of the commission, just so we have a complete public record.
Sure. No conflicts of interest. The only between-meeting communications I had was a few exchanges with Amber, and then I responded to an email by Kim Hendrickson raising some concerns regarding our lateral hiring process and potential changes. Was it?
No conflicts of interest.
I emailed Amber with my new email address, so I have my own separate address, and I also went to the first meeting of Chief Hamner's where an advisory group to him to try to decipher if it's an oversight committee is needed.
Okay, and I've had no conflicts of interest during the month. I have been involved in several email exchanges, all of which have been forwarded for record purposes to Amber. And I've been involved in two telephone conversations during the month, also with Kim Hendrickson, also on the subject of the lateral testing process and the new hire testing process. Okay, next order of business is to approve the minutes from our March 11th meeting. Those were emailed out. Thank you, Amber, for doing that. Are there any corrections or amendments to the minutes of the last meeting?
Nope. It's Rob Killian. I reviewed the minutes, and they all were accurate to my recollection as well.
Okay. I'd I'd solicit a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
And a second. All in favor?
Aye.
And so approved. Next is public comment. I note for the record, we do not have a member of the public here. And Amber, do we have any correspondence from public members that entertain the meeting?
No.
Okay. The first item for discussion was to consider removal of the written exam for lateral hires. I know we discussed that quite at length in previous meetings, but for the benefit of two new commissioners, have you had a chance to review the proposal and any questions or concerns about it?
No, I haven't reviewed it. I agree with the removal. I feel like we should treat lateral hires as professionals.
I concur. As long as we're checking their record and we have some correspondence, so we know as far as their writing abilities, because that was a question I raised before. I concur.
Okay. And I think this has been pretty much unanimously regarded as being a very good idea. And I think that we will increase our stature as an agency quite a bit if we do treat lateral entrants as tenured professionals rather than new hires. One thing I would like to throw out, just so we give it a complete treatment, and make that transition to the idea of tenured professional rather than to the new person coming on the department. We at our special meeting, had some dialogue with representatives from public safety testing, and we had some questions too about the interview process and making sure that we had that process properly vetted to minimize litigation, ensure fairness, and build public trust. What I'd like to do is kind of propose a package, all designed to enhance the lateral process. One of which is getting rid of the entrance exam, trying to do everything we can to adopt a posture that we will treat laterals as tenured professionals, and bring them on board on the basis of demonstrated capability rather than their aptitude. We have to test a new entrant based on aptitude because they don't have any product to put on the table yet for us to look at. But the lateral entrant should have a track record that we should be able to look at and evaluate and make some decisions on. And that track record, quite frankly, should separate the people that we hire from the ones that we don't. And of course, the place to evaluate that track record, in first part, is in the interview structure. And Matt, I want to get your ideas on this specifically. But one concept that the PTS or PST representative mentioned that he found great value in, and just in thinking about it, I think his point was well-founded, and I like it too, was tying the interview question to the background, and in fact soliciting information about specific performance in an interview question, and then as a credibility check or veracity check, taking that as part of the background. And if we find that what the person represented is their qualifications was in fact what they demonstrated, then we accomplish two goals. We have a good assessment of the character of our applicant, and we've been able to demonstrate and prove an excellent capability of performance. On the other hand, if we have somebody who has really tried to razzle and dazzle us with a great interview, but it doesn't turn out that way when we get to the background, then we've also just had an excellent opportunity to evaluate our applicant. So I throw that out as a straw man proposal. What do you think?
So I have a couple questions. I like the process as well of being able to remove that written exam roadblock in some ways that may deter certain applicants and to treat them as professionals. I guess one of my concerns is, though, how we create an objective process. If you're tying questions to an individual applicant's background, every applicant has to be asked the exact same questions. They can provide different examples of a certain behavior mm-hmm. to evidence that particular characteristic or background experience that they've had as a tenured professional. But we have to come up with a way that every question is asked of every applicant exactly the same way, but the responses can be different. But we as a civil service or the panel members wouldn't be able to have, they wouldn't have access or even know the information of what's in or what's going to be revealed at the background investigation process until they pass the oral board.
True.
So I definitely want to provide the information that they reply, and I'd actually like to see if we can visually record, videotape the oral interview, so then the background investigator could use that information later as they vet that background process. But how do we create an oral board that is asked, that is objective, but is not utilizing background information until after the process? So how do we score that?
Well, I think probably the examples we had from PST kind of we get there. And I think one thing, too, that would be important to the process would be to have the questions actually vetted through PST, just make sure we have appropriate questions, and I think that goes a long way to public confidence. All questions would be the same question. And I think the example we had from PST's rep would be, okay, for example, tell me about a time where you had a conflict with a fellow employee, and how did you resolve it? And then the point of the question is to try to go to a person's interpersonal skills, evaluator skills, and decision-making skills. And then in hearing the candidate's response, you know, we would make notes about what was the incident and what happened. And then that becomes fodder for the background investigator. So let's say that we have, and I'll start off with a bad example first, let's say we have the candidates inclined to embellish. Well, you know, I really had this problem with a partner, and he was stealing candy bars when we went into a store. And, you know, lo and behold, he went in and stole a candy bar. I challenged him on it. He basically blew me off. I went to a superior and I made a report. It was painful, and I cooperated in the investigatory process that produced this termination. Now, the background investigator takes that information, goes down, goes through the files, and the background investigator learns, wait a minute, this person was subject to an investigation where two people in a patrol car were accused of stealing from a store. And it was both of them together, and we reviewed the store video camera, and the store video camera showed the alleged theft did not occur. What do we have now? Now, if you saw that background result, he said this, the background investigator found that. What would you conclude?
That's a game stopper.
That's a game stopper.
That ends it. I think what Rich is getting down to, Rob, is that the questions can be generic enough that it's for everybody. So what did you do for community engagement? Well, they share this big, long story about organizing bike rallies. I'm using myself as an example. That's what I used to do. And then you go back and find out all he did was he showed up and dropped the water off for the event. He really didn't come up with this idea and do this. That's all he did for it. I think that's what. So you're judging it two different ways. You're judging the oral interview, and you may give high scores because his answer was right on. Then later in the background, you find out, oh, the answer didn't match it. He really didn't do that. That's when the background kicks
exactly.
out. So that's how you solve both.
Go ahead, Teddy.
I was just wondering, what is the process currently? Is there any system set up for actually checking our current answers to these questions? Because I assume that in previous hires, the hires were asked questions and they gave answers. Were those answers ever checked, vetted for
rest? That's a good question. Does anybody know that?
So the panelists get to write whatever notes that they want to, and that's all part of the personnel package. All of the panelist score sheets and whatever notes that the panelists take in the course of that oral interview goes into the package that is ultimately turned over to background investigators. But whether or not the background investigator is looking at it.
That's his question.
Yeah.
That's his question. Is it were the responses verified?
Yeah, they are.
I'm saying, were they? I don't know the question.
Yeah, that would be for the background investigators.
To know. We could ask that.
So that is more than changing, worrying about changing the questions at the moment. The current questions are probably fine as long as we're getting their answers checked by the background.
Yeah, and I think part of it, part of what I'm trying to accomplish here, one is to make sure we get to a process that treats the lateral entrant as a tenured professional. We also want to get to a process that the public can look at and go, I trust that process. We're not getting any, you know, backdoor, you know, buddy-buddy system. It's upfront and it's defensible. And I also want to get a process, and I'm probably carrying some L.A. baggage with me up here, but to have a legally defensible process so that if somebody doesn't succeed in an application and does choose to litigate, we'll be able to show what we did was reasonable, appropriate, and we'll be able to successfully defend it with a minimum overhead.
So currently, the answers the whole process is not recorded in any way. It's just based on notes taken by the panel.
Correct.
Just so I'm sure I know the answers, but I want to make sure I'm correct. So what we're talking about is we have, let's say, 7 candidates for a lateral position. And these 7 candidates go before the oral board. Then from oral board, the top 3 candidates with the highest scores, so we have these top 3 candidates with the higher scores. Then those candidates will go for the background check. So the panel, so what happens if these 3 candidates, what happens if we need 2 lateral positions and we find out that 2 of them have really exaggerated their answers?
The rules say that the chief gets a list of 3, and we actually have 2 candidate polls. The new folks, the lateral.
Right.
The chief gets 2 lists of 3. Now, the chief gets 2 choices. You can pick 1 of the 3 for whatever vacancy is there. If there's 2 vacancies, pick 2 of the 3. Or if we find for cause that, none of the above is the right answer, then he can come back and say, none of the above, state the reasons, and then get another list of 3.
Well, they're removed from the list, so the ones that are below then move up. So if those top 3, I take those 3. So we don't have to go through more interviews. They've already been interviewed.
Right.
So you say you've got that list of 7, and I come back and go, sorry, those 3, I've got material reasons, and I produce a document that says I can't hire this person because of this. And if it's through the civil service rules and matches, why we're able to remove them from the list, Civil Service Commission then removes that person, and then everyone goes up another slot. Now I've got another available person. Or if 2 are removed, then I've got 2 new people that are just go down that list.
Do we review the top 3? Do we discuss the applicants? Or are those top 3 that are just the highest just automatically, they don't even go through us, and they automatically go right to the chief?
I'm going to defer to Rob, because I haven't done the process yet.
We just certify the validity of the process that we establish ahead of time, and that the scores are valid and they haven't been doctored in any way. We see no names. It's just a number and a score, essentially, because it's that anonymity that it's not you wanting to get your son or your cousin or your brother to the top of the list. It's just a randomized number and then the scores that are recorded either in the Latin entry plus a score for oral, or it's just, in this case, just an oral score that we might report for them.
Because I know the one time when I was on the oral board, mm-hmm. I had no idea how the other panels voted. It was all just our vote and our comments, and that was kind of thing.
And that's how it works. So essentially, Amber would run that interview process, collect all those scores, and aggregate the scores amongst the 4 panelist members and get that one total score for the candidates to then be sorted and ranked accordingly.
And one thing that I really want to do as part of this objectivity process is to retain PSC. It seems to be about the only vendor in the market to really vet the process. And do the training for the interviewers, to vet the interview questions, and basically to oversee the process. And again, that's really going to my third goal of having the defensible process that if yeah, we do wind up trying to litigate the process to be sure that we've got a professional service validating each of the steps.
I just had a couple more comments. Again, I as well am in favor of this move. I guess one of my concerns is if we do get a large number of lateral applicants without a written exam, then to cull the herd or in some way objectively sort that, then we need to do some evaluation to say, We can't interview 20 people in a day. So if we can only interview 7 or 8 candidates in one particular oral board interview, then we need to come up with some ranking process based on years of service in prior law enforcement, a college degree of some kind, give them so many points for that, veterans points and so forth, so then you can essentially sort 20 applicants into just interviewing the top seven based on a very objective basis of pick which ones we're going to interview. And establish that ahead of time so it can't be seen by the public where it's very transparent that, oh, well, the only people you're interviewing are all the neighbors of the chief that day. So that's what I think we need to somehow establish that you refer to it as a record review, but I think it needs to almost be, because I don't think we can ask Amber to evaluate points for awards given. It's got to be a very strict.
It's a writing from record, and I'm an advocate of writing from record that has its limitations, and one of the limitations is that the records are drawn from different sources. You can't equate the sources, and therefore you have a hard time, you can't equate the records. But I think, too, given our historical experience, Amber, have we ever had a case where we've been overrun with lateral applicants?
I don't know off the top of my head. Like, I can't give you a yes, 100%, this is the correct answer, but from what I've heard and just kind of the dealings that I've had with Kate in my transition, I can say no. I don't think that's ever happened, but I would have to go back and double-check that.
I think from the comments from PST is they've got jobs that are paying almost $100,000 a year, they can't get laterals. Nobody can. We're struggling to get anybody.
I think ideally we should be able to give an interview to all who apply and meet the threshold qualifications, which makes the waiting for record problem go away. And I'm almost inclined to say, even if we did have 20, maybe the best answer might be to go to 2 days of interviews, because I'd probably consider us all fortunate. I'd rather look at all 20 than just try and arbitrarily narrow the pool.
Is it more difficult to have laterals apply to be a police officer on Bainbridge because we're a smaller community? Does that factor into it?
I don't know about that. I just know that all the agencies in Kitsap County, with the exception of one, don't require the written test, so they are having access to laterals. We're not getting a chance to interview, and that's really the issue. And right now, as we all heard from John Walters at PSD, everyone's fighting for that same pool of applicants, and we're not getting. I mean, it just WSB's got I want to say at least 100 or more slots that they can't fill. They can't get applicants.
Yeah, and also what I found just from my travels to the profession, applicants have two major motivators. The really good applicants want to advance their career and get to a work area that better suits them. A lot of people come into law enforcement, with a shotgun approach. I'll put out 100 applications, and I'll go to work for the first department that hires me, get a few years under my belt, and then go to the department I want to go to. And those folks tend to make really good hires if the reason for them wanting to come to your agency makes sense and it's a good fit. And those are the folks you really want to go after. And our department, I think, has a couple of things that would really appeal to those folks. It's a great place to raise a family. You've got great schools. The pay is pretty good. You can actually afford to live here on what you make. So there is a group of folks that we're going to appeal to. That's a very well-defined group. Now, there's another group of laterals that aren't happy where they're at, want to go someplace else, may need to go to someplace else because they may not have their current job much longer, and will do anything they can to get another job because they need to have an income. And those folks become very problematic because they've generally been in law enforcement long enough to know what you got to say in an interview to get hired. And quite frankly, the people that work for them really want to praise them to the background investigator because they want them to go away. So it takes a lot of skill to identify those folks.
If I might interject just a piece of information to consider, one of the things when the chief had sent me the information that he gathered from when he did the poll, the survey from other chiefs in Kitsap County, of the agencies that do not use a written exam, I think all of them use an application review. And so that is another alternative to a rating from record. And so in your packet, I provided the city's application. And so that, not that I'm advocating one way or another, but it's just, there is information on here that if you were going to do a fairly objective, you know, we allow this many points, 3 points for a college degree, 3 points for this type of training, whatever, all of that information, or at least most of what I think would be relevant to capture, we could easily capture on the city's application. And this is already part of the process. Everyone who, you know, applies here fills this out, and it has, you know, do they have a degree? If so, from where? Were they in the military? If they were, what medals do they have? And so, it has a spot for them to indicate any other licenses or, skill sets. And so, the commission could develop, assign, basically points for each of whatever items, and then we could apply that. So that's just something else.
There's also numbers. I really would want to give the interview to everybody, because there may be some gems out there you want to catch. And I am sensitive to the problems with the record review, or it's basically the same thing. You mentioned a college degree. Well, Washington State Patrol just had a major problem where they had applicants that claimed college degrees to put them ahead of the pack in the promotion process. Then they found out the college degrees they had were college degrees they bought on the internet. So, you've got a problem there. How do you equate college degrees? So we can really avoid the whole thing if we did just try and accommodate everyone who has met the threshold qualifications.
Rich, to even simplify it more, and I think this goes back to Rob's question, is when we put out the minimum qualifications to be a Bainbridge Island police officer, if that application says they meet those, then we give them an interview. You have to be a U.S. citizen. You have to have, 60 college credits. You can't be convicted of a felony. Just basic minimum qualifications. If you look through this application and they match all those, I say we give them an interview, because we're not going to, as you say, we're not going to get enough applicants as it is. So I think all we have to say is when you put out the announcement, if you want to be a Bainbridge officer, and they list the minimum qualifications, if they match those, give them an interview. That way that is as fair and as defensible as you can get. Not convicted of a felony, so many credit hours of college. Now, can you check that later on the background? Yeah, we can call the university and see if they ever got those 60 hours. So the easiest thing to do, I think, is just meet the – because like you, I don't want to miss any of these applicants. So why not, if they meet the minimums, let's give them an interview.
Yeah, well, I don't think we're going to kill ourselves if we
– I don't either. I think that's – and that makes it very simple, very court defensible, and nobody's going to have an issue that, oh, we're requiring that you have – you want to be able to juggle three apples. Okay, that's a little – unrealistic, but if you meet all the minimum qualifications that we require as a Bainbridge police officer, we'll give you an interview. I hope we have 20 lateral applicants, but I don't see that happening.
Okay.
What if you have a lateral who has is outstanding, appears to be outstanding, and you do the background, again appears to be outstanding, but doesn't have those 60 college credits?
I'm just showing that as hypothetical. I will tell you, many large departments nationwide tried to require that and have since reversed.
Do we have?
I don't know what we have. I don't know what those are going
to
be.
So I think it's in the job description. As it stands now, to qualify as a lateral applicant, the minimum requirements were that they complete an academy, a regular police officer academy,
right,
or an equivalent from another state, at least 1 year of law enforcement experience and have been employed within the last 24 months, that you don't have a long break in service.
But what about, education?
It's high school diploma at this point. It says in our current application, it's high school diploma. So that's what I'm along the same lines, is that if they meet all the basic requirements and don't hit any of the disqualifiers, essentially give them, that's a 70% grade, and then everything after that is just a plus. Like, oh, you got 60 credits, great, you get 5 more points. You got a good degree, that's 10 points. But then it gets hinky if there are 2 years of law enforcement experiences in Dimebach, Texas versus Indianapolis or something. So how can you equate those years of service?
But that's splitting hairs.
Right, exactly. So I don't think
you're never going to be able to judge that. So I spent 2 years on Marco Island, Florida, or I spent 2 years at NYPD. Definitely different. But that, I think, once the background's done, and then the interview and the oral interview, those things will come out. They've had a wide array of experience, because quite honestly, regardless of where they've been, if they, like I said, we teach them all to drive, we teach them all to shoot and teach them all to do the other things. What I can't teach is this. And that past experience that comes out in that oral interview and then comes out in the background and then comes out in the chief's interview is hopefully going to, as you say, call all that together, and you're going to be able to make an informed decision.
The reason I ask is I'm not real concerned about the college degree or Sunday. I don't think having a college degree is going to make a wonderful police officer or not make a wonderful police officer. I think all the other things are what makes an outstanding police officer.
Is everybody comfortable with those being the minimum requirements to qualify for laterals, just 1 year of law enforcement experience and no breaks in the last 2 years? Are we comfortable with that basic requirement?
If that's the current requirement, I am very comfortable in keeping the current.
And John made a good point, you know, with Gen X's that move around a lot. Now, I'm not even sure that, you know, 2 years might be on the short side. And most agencies allow a 3 to 5 year break. I learned that the hard way. If I had a 3.5 year break in my California State Service and had to repeat an academy because of it.
The 2 year break in service is CJTC requirement, so that's in there, but the 1 year is up to us on how long they have to have. That's how it's written in there now. If you're good with one, I'm good with one. But if you feel that, you know, 1 year, they're off probation, officer coming from another department, is a good lateral candidate.
So ask the question again, Rob.
So are you, the basic minimum requirements to apply to be a lateral officer here are 1 year of law enforcement experience, completed an academy, and no longer than 2 years of break in service if they're coming from somewhere else. Are you good with all that?
And the 2 years break is from CJTC for the equivalency academy. Yeah, I'm happy.
So one year is of experience is you're comfortable with that?
Is calling them a lateral?
Yes.
Yes, I am.
Okay, I think we're kind of together. Any more points before I make a motion?
The only other one, I think we'll get to it maybe in the executive session, is how we can convert what we have for an entry level that's the show your ability into questions that elicit behavioral examples for labs.
Let's cover that one on that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have some examples.
Okay, what I'd like to do is make a motion. And the motion is this. One, that we...
I don't think we can motion. Someone else has to initiate the motion.
Point of order?
That's actually correct. You can...
Okay.
I will... May I have a motion?
I will solicit a motion then that addresses the area of the philosophy of our lateral entrant, deleting the written test, and setting up a question and vetting process with vendor involvement.
So I move that we do just that. We remove the written exam requirement for lateral applicants and base the certifying score solely on an oral board evaluation at this point, and the new oral board questions will be re-vetted in executive session later this meeting on how we develop those new questions.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you. Appreciate it. I think it'll be a great benefit to the city and the department.
Okay, senior police clerk recruitment.
Okay, so for this item, we just need to determine how many applicants we are going to review. So currently, just to give a quick recap of where we are, we got the picked the vendor when we were in our special meeting. I've got the test materials here. They're ready to go. We have advertised the position already internally according to our union contract. And so I believe today it posted externally. So now we have a 10-day window to where we are going to be receiving applications. And once that closes, I'll basically review those, and then we'll go through the examination process. So we need to determine how many applicants, once we get the exam results back, how many of those applicants we are going to interview. So that's step number one. In the past, I don't know if you want past history or not, but I think in the past we've scheduled for 8 interviews, and then frequently someone's unable to make it or, you know, doesn't. So I think that we've had like between 6 and 7 previously, but so I'm not sure if you want to continue with that or change it up, but that's kind of where we've been in prior.
That's correct. That's what we've done in the past. Essentially, the way it works is that an oral panel gets here about 8 o'clock in the morning. They go through the training of an evaluation, and you'll deliver something similar to the for a clerk's panel as you would for an officer panel on the scoring and the question format. And then the first interview would be about 9 o'clock. And then they run about 45 minutes, and then the last 15 minutes is the score, summation, discussion points, a quick break, and then getting the next candidate in at the top of the hour. Take a quick lunch break, and you can do about 7 or 8 of those throughout the day, and you're usually wrapping up by 5 o'clock that night. And they're typically done the week before we meet again, so then we can certify the scores and tally everything up to get a new roster up at our next meeting.
This is 10th position.
Timing-wise, Chief, and actually for both of you, so in the very near future, over the next 2 months, we're looking at running these oral panels for a clerk, entries, laterals, probably multiple days for laterals if we get that many. So there's a bandwidth issue that you have to consider from your standpoint because you're going to run all those.
Yeah.
And then we got to get candidates to sit on the panel. So you got to think about your own bandwidth and scheduling with Doug for a lot of you to do that and when we're going to be able to coordinate all that.
Right. I've looked kind of out and was looking at, I think May 6th is the date we had set aside for interviews for this candidate. And then really for the lateral or for the officer positions, there's not as much involved as far as like what we've had to do with this process because we have the continuous testing. Basically, you know, we don't have to advertise. We don't have to do any of that. All we have to do is select a panel and set a date, determine how many candidates we're going to interview and set a date for the orals. And so I was looking and I think like it's May 6th, we could shoot for like the 28th, I think, is a Monday, Tuesday. Sometime towards the end of April we could do. I know that this is important, so, you know, I can make the time. I think the thing that we really need to consider more than my time, because I feel like Doug is very understanding about, you know, when I'm doing civil service. I wear two very distinct hats, and he does not, you know, prevent me from doing civil service things. So I think the more important element is, are we going to be able to get the citizen panelists? And do we want to, you know, because I think we had three new people indicate interest, and then there were some that had previously been on lists. I think I have a list included in the packet for everybody. But, you know, that takes a considerable amount of time, and so I don't know if it depends on who you want to select, and maybe we have different panelists for each different, you know, set of interviews, or if we have people that are available, you know, we might need more bodies to fill, you know, somebody might have to sit on two panels, I guess. So I think that will be more of the difficult element than my schedule. And I feel like I said, I know that this is important. And so I feel like once we get this ball rolling and at least get this part, I feel like a lot of this has been kind of carried on for a while. And these, you know, we have vacancies not piling up, but you know what I mean? Like we're getting to a point to where this is becoming sort of a critical thing. And so I feel like once we get past this first set, you know, and we actually reestablish, because right now we don't have anyone on our continuous eligibility list. Once we reestablish that and actually get some bodies on there, I feel like then we'll be able to kind of, you know, take a bit more time and kind of, you know, fill this up. But I can make the time to do those, you know, within the next few, I would say before the end of May, and I think that's really stretching it, so.
Just to add, in the last 4 days, we had an officer crush their foot and their head just had surgery. So now we're short another officer. And they're going to be gone several months. So that's when we talk about it, it's not that it's more openings, it's that we've now got more gaps. And when you're running on a very paper thin line, put you behind.
So when we've run the clerk's position panel in the past, has that been a four member panel as well?
To my knowledge, yes. So I don't know how relevant this is, but right now we've got Lieutenant Jensen is, I believe, the lieutenant who's going to be sitting in on the on the clerk panel. So we've got that, and I believe Barb is working on getting the other.
We have the other one.
Okay. So really.
We don't have it, but have a request. I'm sure they'll fill it.
For an outside agency to sit in on the panel. So really what we need to do is determine from our list basically how many people we want on the panel and who we are going to and in what order we're going to invite the panelists, and then I can move on that. But we should definitely, and we should decide that because I, just because people's schedules are busy and I don't know if the panelists are employed or not, and sometimes, so there's a lot of things that need to be considered and people need some notice to be able to make the sixth work, if we're going to make that work. So,
the only, typically, historically, the commission has taken the list of applicants that wish to be on a hiring panel, and we will call them and just do a brief kind of conflict of interest vetting process. It's just a brief conversation that they don't know anybody that's applying, they don't have any grievances against the city or the police department, they're not coming in with any preconceived notions of hiring or not hiring, that they can be objective and verify that process. So we've made some calls in the past personally and just kind of made our way down the list and then do that in our in-between time, or I think before we even empowered like a small subcommittee, two people were designated, they made the calls and then we empowered them to, if they felt comfortable making that, then we would send those names over to the Secretary Chief Examiner to make all the arrangements for the scheduling of that, how we've done it in the past.
Just one question, we use four people on the interview panel?
Previously, that's how we've historically done it, yes. And it's generally two, someone from the city, and someone from an outside agency, another officer from Polso or somewhere in Kitsap County, I think, and then two citizen panelists.
Okay. And the reason I ask is four seems, you know, there's a certain psychology to being interviewed, and at some point it's like, there's people I'm talking to. Normally I see panels of two and three, and a lot of interviewing theory is once you get more than three interviewers, the process may not be quite as facilitated as it needs to be. So I was kind of feeling comfortable that three might be the maximum number I want to see on the panel.
When I was on the panel,
four
was wonderful. We could ask questions of the two police officers if we had some questions, and the particular panel that I was on, we need to take my name off that list too, but we worked very well together. I liked the two civilian and the two police officers. I felt it was a good balance.
That's worked well for me, too, as well, four, two, and two.
Okay, now I'll withdraw the point.
The only other idea is, we haven't done it historically, but I think it might be useful, especially at the background point that you're talking about, is actually recording the interviews. Could we set that up with someone at the city to visually and audio record the interviews, so if an issue comes up, it may not be as big as an issue on the clerk, but you know, to that point of being able to validate.
Yeah, and that would be good to vet the last three rounds of promotional interviews in LA County were video recorded. We didn't do anything with the video, we had some complaints, but if there was a complaint about the executive process, the video would be good.
Something you could review, something the background.
I think it's a good idea. We, for many years, we've audio and video recorded our interviews, both for promotions and for new hires. And it goes back to, you know, we would get rated and someone would challenge a promotional score. You go back and replay we used to do only audio, but now we do visual because then they rate your, you know, appearance. And video, you know, with high definition and digital recorders.
Yeah, when
it's clear that the tie had big blotches of chocolate on the front or whatever else, you know. The breakfast was still there. I mean,
body language,
there's all kinds of things. So I think court defensively, I mean, I think it makes sense. I mean, to have that.
Yeah, unless there's some unknown reason not to, I like the idea of the video recording. One, for the defensibility, but two, if we're going to combine, at least for the laterals, you know, the veracity of the interview with the veracity finding process in the background, that video is a great starting place.
Yeah. I don't know what the city has to do to go through that. That's the only challenge, you know, money wise.
Yeah, that's what I would be concerned about. Is the reason it seems like such a common sense decision to have them recorded. The fact that they haven't been previously makes me wonder why, and there is some sort of conflict or just
a lot of things.
The state of Washington's a little different, right? You know,
a lot of things are just organizational inertia. We've never done it that way before. It seems to be a pretty compelling reason not to do it that way in the future.
But I think it would be in two-party consent here. I mean, I think obviously they have to know that they're being...
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's kind of hard to hide. Plus, the video camera sometimes, it has kind of a calming effect on everybody, too.
Is that something you just validate with Scott, make sure there's no legal issues or anything like that, so long as we're making it well-known and they understand and they consent to it?
Yes, I'll get his opinion, but I think we should be okay.
I can't see a problem with it, but that's part of the vetting process we're paying for.
Yeah.
I'd actually be concerned about the security of the actual tape or the recording afterward.
Well,
that would be public or private or...
I would imagine it would be private because it would be just, this is an assumption that I would verify, but I would assume that it's just like all the other interview materials. Those are all confidential. We have a lot. Like, all of the civil service materials are kept in, you know, locked files, and they're considered confidential, you know. So we have all the applicant information, all of the information on, like, the previous test cycles and, you know, how people did, the scores, and you know, basically all that information is retained, but it's confidential. And so I would assume that the video would be just the same. Of course, I have to check on that, but that would be, I don't see it being any different. And I would also assume that we have the capabilities, since we record our public council meeting. It just might complicate where we do it, but I can look into it and find that out.
Okay. Any more on that item?
Do we want to designate a small committee to vet or select the oral panelists?
Did we already determine the number of applicants to interview?
We need to vote on that.
The number of applicants. So reasonable, 7, 8?
Do we have an advanced idea of how many applicants we're expecting?
No, I mean, I would. I ordered 100 tests. I don't think we'll have 100 applicants, but I could see us getting anywhere between 50 and 80. I think it's a very, I think it will be a popular position, one that gets a lot of interest. So I think when we actually do the exam process, we're going to have quite a few people that are there for it.
And my first thought is, because you sort of throw out a straw man number, I'd kind of like to be able to interview maybe the top 20% of folks that apply. So if you had 100 applicants, it would probably be good to plan on maybe 20 interviews.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of interviews. But again, you know, you're looking at an employee that's going to be around for a long time, and you want to get the best. The written's only going to be self-aptitude, and not going to get a very good picture of the individual. So if we're taking, you know, someone at the 80th percentile, that's a pretty high cutoff.
Well, when we're talking about a clerk position, we are talking more about aptitude than a police officer. We would want just the we would want less than the top 20%. We want the top maybe 8. It is a very technical, very detail oriented position.
Well, it's also one that, correct me if I'm wrong, it's going to involve a lot of personal interaction, public interaction, and things that you can't test in a written format.
Yeah, but yes, you do interact a lot, but it's, you know, you're from a window. It's the friendliness aspect. It's not, you know, an officer, as you well know, there's a lot of dynamics in that, but you're behind a bulletproof window, and I would say there is a lot of community interaction, but there's also a lot of technical aspect to it, sitting there with, you know, doing criminal histories and accesses and processes on the computer. But I mean, you do, you are interacting with the public, you definitely want a friendly...
How many interviews can we realistically do in one day?
Eight is a max. Oh. Truly a max, and that's a lot of interviews in one day. And just from my personal experience, I mean, this, I know that this is a civil service commission, but it's the purpose of this is to make sure that we have a fair hiring process, and we are doing that. But organizations, as a general rule, do not hire or do not generally interview the top 20% of their. That's a very high number from my experience. And
can you wait without an applicant for setting the bar at the 92nd percentile on the written?
My thought is that it's just that just by virtue of the process, if you have 1 day's of interviews and we qualify eight candidates, score eight candidates, put up the top three even from that point after the oral board and combining those scores with entry. If you don't like those three, then come back. We'll interview some more. But the top candidates on the written exam plus the top scorers on the oral exam is who qualifies basically. And if we don't like those, then that's the process we can come back and re-interview.
Top eight to the interviews. And date for interview, May 6th.
The date is already set for May 6th, yep.
Okay. Any more discussion on the item?
Correct me if I'm wrong, are the scores for this position the same as the 60-40 written and oral split?
I believe so, because I don't think there's a designation. Yeah, I think it applies across the board, is my understanding, and I can confirm that. So I feel like I don't know the rules, you know, inherently yet to be like, yes, that's exactly. I think that's right. I think it's across the board, but I can verify.
So as it stands now, essentially, the 40% of their written score plus 60% of the oral score is how we determine that candidate level. Is everybody still comfortable with that mix of favoring more an oral score, or should that mix be differently between a clerk and an officer position?
Yeah, I think if we are setting the bar high on the written, I'd probably want to defer more to the oral score, so I think probably the 40-60 or 60 split.
I guess my concern is the written exam that they will take, is it thorough enough that we really will have vetted the people who really have all the technical skills, the writing skills, et cetera, that's needed? Because in the oral questions, the personality and that type of thing, the friendliness, that's going to come out pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. But so to me, in this situation, the written test is almost more important than the oral test. And I could well be wrong.
Well, I believe it depends on what is asked during the oral interview.
Okay.
If we are just focusing on their customer service or interpersonal skills, then if we're using that as 60% of the hiring, that's not a very good idea. But mm-hmm. but during the oral interview process, we are actually figuring out if they their level of detail orientation and their ability to work in this environment, then I believe it is more important.
I think too. Also, you kind of look to the spread. Everyone's really the bell curve, you know. From if we're taking just the top eight out of 100, we're already kind of getting out of that bell curve on the technical skills that we can assess in the written format. So we probably shouldn't expect any great differences in ability because we're already out of that bell curve. Now, when we come in with the interview, if we do a good job designing the interview, we'll try and design the questions so that we'll test things that can't be assessed in the written form. Otherwise, you become duplicative. And so if we've already got folks that are in that tail end of the bell curve on their technical skills, then if we're really going to want to try and spread out the difference in qualification, now we probably do want to take a close look at the things that couldn't be assessed in the written format. Because I think that's what got us that 60-40 split. I mean, maybe splitting hairs, because you know, even it'd the end of the day, we're still only going to use the testing process to narrow down to three, and then it's going to be a chief's assessment which one of the three.
I think I'm still comfortable with the 60-40 split.
Yeah, I think I am.
We haven't hired for this position in a long time, so this will be a learning process as well.
But as to the number of interviews and the date of interview, pretty much all set. Do we have any more discussion? Entertain a motion?
I move we accept the top 8 number of applicants to interview based on the written exam for the police clerk position.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
So carried. Okay, and for the record, mine was also an aye, so no one left to say nay, so we didn't ask. That's all the work. I'm still new at this.
That's okay, I know. We're all new.
Okay, entry level.
But we need to approve the oral board panel.
Oh, for the, I'm sorry. Oral board balance.
Determine at least how many.
I can talk about what we've done in the past. Is as a group, we designate 2 individuals, vote essentially to designate 2 people that want to do it. We've split the list in half. Like, for instance, you would call half of the people, you would call half of the people, and anonymous of one another, you pick your candidate that you want to serve on the oral panel, and you report to Amber who you've chosen. So it's you separately vetting the list and you separately vetting the list, and then those candidates are then forwarded on for an oral panel. That's how we've done it in the past, just to add some diversity, and each person is comfortable with who goes forward.
Okay. Now, I like that. That seems objective. And then, Matt, you'd be selecting the department representative. And then what about the outside agency representative?
I've contacted another agency, and they're going to provide some more.
So
I don't have the name of that individual, but
okay, no, and just outside the process, you know.
Yeah.
Cross my name off this list.
Do we want to try to make these calls and try to fill all of the panelists that we need to, not just the clerks, but use this process to then also find candidates for the officers and the entries and the laterals and the clerk at the same time? Or are we just going to try to find candidates for this clerk position that's coming up soonest?
I think if we're dealing with the same process, it may just be more economical to do all 3. And I think particularly with the officer hires, probably need to move relatively quickly on that. So if the process works the same, then we'll roundtable that. I think it may just be better to build 3 panels with 1 shot.
Is there a problem with there being overlap, one panelist serving on 2 different panels?
Yeah, I think just in the interest of objectivity, it may be better to, my preference would be just you serve on 1 panel, and that's just to ensure that if you do have someone with an agenda, you de-isolate its effects. And that's always a problem when you have public participation in something. It's important, but you really do want to isolate the potential for agenda. I think we do have to do the vetting process of selecting the name, and we can also reinforce it by saying we get you on 1 panel. Comments?
Anybody like to volunteer to do that?
I feel like I'm so new that I need to get.
And I would like to do it, but I feel we need to pass within the process of moving both a home and a shop in California. I'm closing on May 2nd, so I'm going to be a busy puppy for a couple of weeks.
Okay, I can volunteer to call half of them.
And I can volunteer to call the other half. That's fine.
And thank you, and thank you for understanding. I want to pull my weight here, but also I definitely want to bite off more than we can chew.
So I think we just need a motion that essentially the commission as a whole would empower Trenton and I to make that decision for those panelist members and report them, because it'll essentially be work done in between meetings, and we won't be able to report back on who those candidates are in the next regular meeting. And we'll just essentially, you'll empower us and trust us to make that decision and then forward those names on time.
I so move.
Second the motion? Can I do that? I don't think I can second my own motion.
I was going to say, we were looking around and said, okay, we have one surviving member. Something about the rule of necessity, I will second. All in favor?
Aye.
I'm not going to ask for any names because everyone voted. So, so Carrie.
All right, I'll take the top half of the list, striking Kathy Dunn's name.
I'd love to, Chip, but I think that might be a conflict of interest.
I think so.
Entry level officer recruitment.
Okay, so I kind of.
Frederick Schiffler.
Touched on this a little bit, but the entry level and lateral process is much simpler than what we had for the clerk because we don't have to advertise, we don't have to do the testing, we have all of that already. So really what we need to do is for entry level, we need to, again, determine how many entry level candidates we want to interview. And we need to, if you guys are handling the panel, then that's also taken care of, but we would need to set a date for the oral interviews for both entry-level and lateral candidates if we want to move on that. So, but the process should be very much the same for both. It's basically we determine the panel, we set the date for the orals, figure out how many people we're going to interview, and then we conduct the interview.
Now, just a quick point of work. Does it require a commission action to set the date or just to set the to establish the panels?
I think it requires an action to set the date.
With the process, I'm sympathetic to need to fill. And if I understand, of all the vacancies we have, we are able to fill two or we're able to fill three.
And so that's another something I had for later, but I got an updated org chart for the police department, and so. If you know, I'll pass these around, you guys can take a look at them, and it might help. So there's, if you look under the lieutenant on the right-hand side, there's two vacancies. And so one was the existing vacancy that we had talked about previously, and the other vacancy is the new vacancy. So I know we had previously talked about possibly splitting the one of the lieutenant positions into two officer positions and two. According to the information that I have, we are now just doing a one-for-one right now. We're not splitting any positions, so the one lieutenant position is being converted to one officer position. There's no splitting of that position. So we have two officer vacancies.
And you're down four? The two medicals and the two vacancies?
Well, yeah, the medicals, but we can't replace
those.
Can't
replace
them. We could, I mean, if we could fill these two, that would make a huge difference.
Yeah, I think really I see a need to really to get the chief two lifts to three as fast as we can, just given this condition. And I think we've identified the process for the laterals, and I think PSC, at least from the information I got last week, I think we need fairly quickly on that. And with a written list and an established process for the new hires, I think we can move fairly quick on that. One thing I do want to solicit Chief's input on, we talked about the value and the lateral of having a testing component of interview questions that drive a background as a veracity check and credibility check. Do you think that same process would be useful for the new hire?
I think it will, because I think back to, I think, Rob's question when he said, or maybe it was Trent's, when they talk about regardless of that question you ask in that oral interview, I think part of it, and have we done that in the past? I don't know, because we haven't hired anybody since I've been here. But I'm definitely, at this meeting, let you know that I will have the background investigators look at those responses and make that part of their background. So whatever those questions are asking, we can verify that the answer they gave is accurate.
Now, Eric, I think from what I got with in talking with John from PSC, we could make that happen relatively quick. So I think really we should work on setting a date for the lateral, set a date for the the new hire. That requires commission action. I'd like to do that at this session so that we can get moving on it and hopefully have that list ready to send over by next session.
Okay.
And just as a reminder, Chair, that the qualities, I mean, we, several of you attended that meeting where we had, and those have been implemented into what we're looking for as an officer, too. So there's been some good work done as far as getting that established.
Yeah, and I'm also hopeful, too, that when we do the vetting process and the questions with the PSC, that the information drawn from that meeting will be part of the vetting process and question selection. And being kind of a nice wrap around everything and have some public transparency that I think would be good, some objectivity, and get some legal vetting, which, again, there's my LA baggage again, will hopefully keep us out of trouble if somebody feels disenfranchised by the way their application is.
So do you feel that we can have oral interviews of entry-level officers before our next main regular meeting?
I'd like to do that. I think that would be appropriate in light of the vacancies, and I think it would probably also be good just from a selection standpoint if we're able to work off two lists of three, because, again, we may have a new hire that may present above a lateral or vice versa, and if we can't look at the list side by side, then I think we might impact our ability to make the best choice.
So our next meeting would be, what, the second Tuesday, so May 13th, looks like the date.
My only concern is then today, in the next hour or so, is there only time then to decide on what those questions are going to be then to vet those?
I don't think we need to select the questions. I think what we need better do is decide on a vetting process that will produce the selection questions.
Empowering essentially PST to develop those for us, but I think final sign off on what that test is going to be, though.
Do we need to actually sign off on the actual?
You have to, but the commission must approve the questions, for what I understand, yes.
Okay, then I
now,
will.
Go ahead.
But don't you, maybe this is a dumb question. I mean, I feel like I don't know very much. But that, don't we need to have a certain period of time to advertise this to have these candidates? Or do we have them already?
No, because, so this is, and this is where it gets a little confusing because you came in when we were doing the clerk hiring, and that process is much different because we don't have a continuous testing cycle for positions like that, administrative positions. Mm-hmm. All the officer positions, there's a continuous testing cycle. So people take the test, the written test, all the time, and I get their scores, and actually that information is in your packet. So if you look, there's two different lists. There's an entry level and there's a lateral. So these are all people who have passed the written test already.
Okay.
So we don't need to advertise. We don't need to test.
Okay, thank you.
We accept applications all the time.
And can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
Still something up. We only have 8 lateral people on there. We could interview all there's no ready from record. We just interview all 8 of them.
Okay.
I want to say simpler. There's just a lot of things that are ongoing for the officer positions that are not ongoing for the administrative positions. So all these people basically are ready for their oral interview.
Okay, thank you. I didn't realize.
Yes.
If we have to approve the actual verbiage of each question, does that also have to happen in a regular notice meeting, or can that happen in a special session?
I believe that's what the executive session is for. We're going to review all of that.
Okay, and do we have that ready to go today?
Yeah, it's on the agenda.
Okay. Is that just officer questions, or is that the clerk's questions as well?
I have all of them. I have entry-level questions for officer. I have the clerk questions ready to go, and I have a proposed sampling of behavioral-based questions that I got from the California Peace Officer testing site, and I just kind of went through and took some. There were some that weren't all that great, but there were some that, you know, I think we could use. And so the benefit of this is this actually, this recommendation came from John to go on the California Post. So those are already verified questions.
Let's table item 7, the post-executive session. And I think if we handle the questions well in executive session, I think we can come back to item 7, set dates, finalize that, and that way be able to conduct the interviews before our next regular session. Let's table item 7 and move on. Item 8, discuss open public meetings act.
I thought that was you.
Yeah, that was me. And the questions come up after our training with Ethics Board and trying to find some way to have meaningful information exchange absent the conduct of business before a next regular meeting. And I know we've adopted a business practice of exchanging singular emails, which really runs the risk of cutting somebody out of the loop inadvertently. I've given a quick look to the Open Meetings Act and just some secondary material. I haven't given a detailed look as of yet just due to time constraints. But I think there probably has to be a better way of accomplishing information exchange absent decision making, which would clearly violate the Act, so the Commission could better perform its function between meetings. I would like to solicit the opinion of the General Commission. I don't necessarily want to ask for a city attorney opinion at the moment, because I know there are conflicting opinions out there and would rather have a city attorney reconcile opinions and throw one more into the mix. But what's the sense of the remaining, the rest of the commission as the ability to do information exchange during the month?
I have a question, and I thought of this after our meeting with John Walters, and you said, does anybody want to go to lunch? If three of us had said yes, let's go to lunch together, is that a violation?
Well, that's part of the question. And the Open Meetings Act, if we're conducting business, then the meeting has to be noticed. So, you know, you can't just get together and say we're going to have a meeting. You have to know.
Right.
But the trigger all seems to be the conduct of business. Now, the city is, I understand, still party to a lawsuit involving the city council and the exchange of emails amounting to business. And that also triggered another request they have to see if we could get commission email on a city email program just so we had a reliable archive and didn't expose personal computers to city scrutiny. I think part of the city council lawsuit was two of the city council members were required to surrender their personal computers for examination after emails were found which were not disclosed. And one, that's embarrassing to all involved, and two, it, you know, it also runs the risk of at least those two city council members having their other computer contents compromised. There's kind of a rock and hard place. The meaningful due business, you need to stay informed, you need to have access to information. And to comply with the Public Records Act or the Public Meetings Act, you can't conduct business that way. So it really invites the question, where is the line between information exchange and the conduct of business? And at least for me, that line's clear with mud right now.
Just from my experience, on this commission and then the Ethics Board previously, is that in the minds of the city and the community, its transparency is key, just so long as everything is done above board. And that's why we have that item number 2, disclosure of conflicts of interest between meeting communications, on there. That if Kathy and I meet for coffee, that's fine, because we're, now that we have a 5-member panel, we're not considered a quorum, and we can discuss certain things. But in the interest of transparency and notice, when we have our next regular meeting, I would make a notice. Kathy and I had a meeting, and we discussed, you know, we don't like the uniforms they wear. We should talk to the chief about making their uniform, you know, another color or something like that. It could be whatever random topic, but just so long as you're noticing it and the public has a has a input or a information exchange about that. The gray part is when it comes to email exchanges, that if we are sharing information but not sharing our opinion, the way we might vote, how we feel on a certain opinion, if you come across a great OPM article or something or information on hiring or something that the AG puts out or something, we can share that information just as the rote information exchange, but not that like, oh, this is a great idea, let's totally adopt this next meeting.
Exactly.
That's what we can't add on to it.
Exactly, and then I think we're kind of at the point now where the belief is that the information exchange cannot occur, and the lack of information impedes the ability of the commission to function well.
I will say that this commission particularly has been scrutinized in the past. It was the commission that stood up before I came aboard, ended up all resigning for these very issues. But the circumstances of that were business was being conducted outside of a public meeting, and that's what caused that. So long as we are all aware of that situation, and we are above board and very transparent in our dealings, and that's how we conduct ourselves, and we can exchange information, be utilizing Amber to do that, or sharing it as an information-only exchange and not an opinion or doing business exchange as an exchange conducted.
What I really don't want to see is if information goes for me, say I get a great article and go, this is really informative. We need to think about this. But right now, the belief seems to be I can send that to Rob, I can send that to Amber, but if I send it to two or more people, then we've somehow violated the Meetings Act, which I don't think is the case. Now, if we send and say, this is a great idea, we need to do this, now we violated the Meetings Act.
I just have a couple of things to add about this. First, aside from emails, meetings in general, you brought up a point of if three of you wanted to go out for lunch. I would just caution you that it is not just the act, but it is the perception that is very important. And I know that that's always going to be a gray area, but it is a very critical part of public trust. Whether you're talking about your grandkids or not, it's important to consider that if someone, a member of the public, sees three commission members, a quorum of commissioners, out for coffee, someone could very easily perceive that you're conducting business, and that's a huge issue. So that is one caution I will put out there. Second, there is no restriction for all of us emailing. Again, it's something to keep in mind. We can all email as long as nobody replies to all. And you are perfectly able to send an email out individually to all five commissioners. There's nothing wrong with that. There's also nothing wrong with me disseminating information. And I have no problem putting in an email, do not reply to all. The problem is, it is a very easy mistake to make for somebody to get excited about something and, hey, this is a great idea, we should do this, or to not pay attention to that, and you end up, it to me seems like it's a very slippery slope. I know it makes it difficult to do business, but I also can see the side that that is an element of being a public servant that you have to, I guess, learn how to deal with. And it should be easier now that we have a five-member commission. I just feel like everyone has a different perception of what's business and what's not business.
And the other thing that, and this goes to the future city email system, would also be very nice to be able to do all the correspondence on a city email server so that everything is archived and everything is appropriately discoverable. And we wouldn't have a situation like we have with city council emails where multiple emails were found but weren't disclosed.
See, that there's a different element to that because the city council members do have city email addresses and they did not use them. They were using their personal email addresses, and that's very different.
For transparency, it would be very good to have everything done on a city maintained server and properly archived and properly displayed.
And that is coming. I think I emailed all of you that,
Did you know about one?
The date for our implementation here, the target, is sometime this summer. Now, there will be a delay because they have to implement it in the city first and then create, you know, emails. But to my understanding, all commission or committee members will be getting a city email. So that is in the works, and it will be, in the scheme of things, it will be relatively soon that that will happen. And in the meantime, there, you know, you have the ability, I think I mentioned this before, to set up a separate email account that is specifically just for civil service, so that if you really have a concern of not, you know, opening up your personal, your, you know, your Gmail account or whatever, you have everything in one spot. But again, there is a big difference between the litigation with the city council, because they have a city email address, and they were, you know what I mean? There's, and there's just different things at play there.
Would this help solve the problem? If there was some information, just general information that I thought would be a benefit to all of us, could I send that to Amber to vet? And if she says, Kathy, that's great, send it to each member individually, then I would do it. It seems like if we had one person maybe vetting it, that would keep us above, that would, for me, then I would know, okay, yeah, this is, I'm doing what's correct.
Well, we can certainly do that. I feel like that's an extra step in the process. So if you wanted to send something to me, I can individually disseminate it, or you can individually disseminate it. Or if we have a consensus that people are going to take it seriously to not reply to all, then, I mean, it's really up to the commission how you want to move forward. I am just very, very cautious about this because it's a very slippery slope. And like I said, there's perception involved. This commission has had issues in the past.
You go through litigation, so that's why it's on the agenda.
And people have very different opinions of what is business and what is not. And that I feel like can really, it can get you in hot water.
I want to run with this one a little more. And quite honestly, I should have taken more time to develop this one before I put it on for tonight. Just with the move, I got involved in other things. So unless anyone has anything more, let me table this. I want to come back in a month or two with a little more better developed background and maybe mature that into a request for the city attorney to take a look at. But premature right now. Okay, Jake, all yours.
All right, well, we talked about manpower. We have an officer who's injured severely, going to have surgery, and will be off for several months, so that's exacerbated our manning issues. So I'm glad and grateful to the commission tonight for the decisions they've made. I appreciate the support and moving forward, and I think we've got a good process, or we'll have, and get some good candidates and start doing those things. Because I think part of this, just so you all know, this affects our community outreach too. There's a lot of things in the last 10 months that we've done to reach out to the community in a lot of ways. And when we don't have the manpower, it really ties our hands. So I appreciate that effort. Update on the burglar. I think you all saw the press release we put out about the burglar. He's still hitting us. We have not caught him. I wish we had. But we picked up a stolen car yesterday at McDonald's. We picked up a couple other individuals that are down to jail that we're interviewing today, and we've actually confiscated a car and got a search warrant for it. And hopefully that leads us to finding who's responsible for these burglaries. I don't know if you have watched that, but we're up to somewhere around 20-some burglaries on the island in a very short period of time. Same MO. We believe it's either the same person or persons doing it. And not just unlocked. They're picking up a rock or a hard object and busting glass and making entry into these homes. So,
any particular geographic area?
No, well, we think we might have a pattern now. Up until today, no. As I looked at them, and we've pin mapped them, we've actually got officers. One of our reserves who came in on his own time is retired Seattle PD, Mike Chambliss. He came and did a pin map, and we've got burglaries all over the island. But we're starting to see a pattern where we're tying it down, which is good, because with only two officers, you want to be able to put them in that area that it's occurring and times of day. And for example, we think it's on the particular days of the week, but we just ask that everyone be vigilant. And so when you talk to people, ask them to be looking for suspicious vehicles. And again, there's the same MO. They're parking in parks or adjacent areas and walking to that home, so there's no tire tracks or anything else. So just be aware of cars parked in odd areas at odd times of day and doesn't make sense. Or you see somebody knocking on your neighbor's door that you know your neighbor's not home. What are they doing at their house? Please call. We'd rather respond to that and ID these individuals. It's only 16 officers or 24,000 residents. We know which works better. We're getting through Lexapol. I know that we've talked about that. A lot of the recommendations that we've made when we got here, the report to the council, a commission, I think, should be up to date. The three lieutenants are in a leadership school, one put on by the AACP. It's a nationally recognized called LPO, Leadership for Police Organizations or Police Officers. And it's out here at CJTC. All three lieutenants are in that. That's a three-week school. They just finished their second week a couple weeks ago, and they'll have their third week at the end of this month. And we'll finish that leadership school. They went through an evaluation school several months ago to do evaluations. And we are, like I say, working through Lexapol. We're getting the last of those policies read through and approved and should have that online. If you realize we've had that in the city for 5 years, and we just in the last 6 months we've done a lot of good work on that to get that done. That's a lot of work. But the good thing is, and I don't know if you realize that our policy manual is so outdated. It just is. As I've read through the general orders, I just look at it and it's just way out of date. I'm talking about years and years. And so Lexapol is bringing us up to federal, state, best practices, and implement a lot of things for the department. So I'm pretty excited about when that gets done. And we're real close to handing that to the city attorney, handing that to the guild, and give them a certain time frame, and we'll have that done. So we're not very far away from that date. That's been a lot of work. Other things we're looking at, you know about the public safety building, announcements about that. Are you all aware of the
combined facility
or the standalone, depending on what they're looking at? I didn't realize how small our building was. It's about 700 square feet bigger than the house I sold in Indiana. Now, I know I have a lot of kids, but I don't have that thing. So it's just hard to do business in that building. It really, really is, especially for the things we're being tasked with. So I appreciate the support the community has given us on that. And I can tell you, everybody I talk to is very much in favor of getting us a building. And we know that was one of the things that the Pendleton Report recommended, was having a facility that we can conduct business in. I am in the process of purchasing six, I think we're at six more bikes. This is going to be done through mitigation funds, through a Squamish tribe to add to our total. We have several officers going to bike training. They will finish on June 17th. And I want to say that's six more officers we're going to put through for that training. They have to be certified to be on a bike. So as we increase manpower, this is another thing. We talk about community outreach. I can't put officers on foot patrols. I can't put officers on bicycles. I don't have officers to take radio runs. So as we do that, I think this will we'll get to that point and getting them trained so we can do that, especially for the summer months coming up. Reserve Academy. I know the Civil Service Commission is not involved in that. We talked about that. County is putting on a Reserve Academy in late fall of this year. So I've directed Lieutenant Jensen to start the recruiting for reserves. Asked him to get 6 to 8 applicants to 6 to 8 people that we have vetted to go to that academy, because what they tell me is you end up with about half of them that finish. And so having more than 3 or 4 isn't feasible for our department. So if I can put 6 to 8 in that Reserve Academy, hopefully that gives us 3 or 4 that will actually stay with our department. So that's kind of the goal there. I think that's nice to have, because we're down to a very small three reserves right now that we can use. When we have crime waves like this one or the one we had in December, it's nice to build a pool for those people to assist in doing that. Let's see.
Do you have the computer program yet that will pinpoint where crime
is? No. I am doing, I've asked, going to sign off on that here very soon. Already got the purchase request. It's called BEAR. It's basically a crime analysis program that will take all the, from everything from CAD and everything from ILEAD. CAD is the computer dispatch runs that you don't end up writing a report on, and then ILEAD is what you actually write a report on. This program actually pulls from both sources and matches that. So when you ask me if we had it pinpointed, right now we're doing it, you know, by hand and looking at where these burglaries are occurring. And with short manpower, it would be nice, punch a couple buttons and boom, a pin map appears immediately. And it goes, you can punch in any identifying information, modus operandi, you know, a red pickup truck was spotted in three burglaries. They're going to have that for you. Oh, here's a, you know, you're going to show every common thread that you can have in those crimes. It's a wonderful program. It's expensive to get started. It's about $8,000, but after that, it's only like $1,200 a year to maintain, about $100 a month. I went through the program. It's very, very effective and would be very beneficial to our department. So, and not only that, this crime acts, it can do accidents, so it can tell us where we need the officers to patrol, what times of day. So what it does is takes a department and tells you what hours of the day, what days of the week, what times of year, spring, summer, fall, winter, and tells you where officers should be to be most effective in reducing, whether it's crashes, burglaries, car prowls, whatever you're looking at. So, yes, that's coming up here very shortly. And what we wanted to do before we did it is get officers very compliant in entering the information. And we were about 75%. That doesn't sound like a lot, but that means one-fourth of all the reports aren't accurately put in for information. One of the problems was the computer, you get a run to 625 Winslow Way. That looks like the biggest crime element. I think we already talked about this. Did I already mention this to you? Okay, so I don't want to repeat it, but that's what we're fixing. And now we're getting there. We've coached and counseled and talked to those officers, making sure we're in compliance. So we have a much higher compliance rate is what Lieutenant Dave tells me, from the 75%. So now we're ready to bring the crime analysis on board.
Okay, great. And temporary position, staffing?
So that was something that you wanted me to add on for the chief to talk about. You were going to talk about the discussion about the temporary and acting positions. This came out of the temporary appointment of a lieutenant. Or the acting lieutenant.
Dale.
Yeah.
No, I think we got that one resolved last time around.
Okay.
So I think that one's pretty much been buried. And the other concern I have, which I think also got buried, was whether we were going to be doing promotional testing. And I understand with the current recommendations, that's now a moot issue.
Well, not permanently, but as of right now, yes, it is. Under the current situation, we have a greater need to add the officers that we have vacancies for, to put those on the street to reduce where we're at. I have no intention of making anybody else an acting lieutenant. The three we have is sufficient. And I have no intention at this point to throw in a promotional process right now. We've got so much on the table now, I don't think we need to add anything else.
So I think
get these processes done, and we'll talk about that.
I think the first issue is resolved, and if there's no issue with doing a promotional exam, then that issue is all resolved. And it's just at some point when we do look at doing a promotional exam, that one's probably going to be a heavy lift in terms of defining what the process is going to be and how to go about. So that one will probably benefit from as much lead time as we can get to figure out. That'll be new territory, I think.
But, you know, it's something we can talk about in the future for sure. I mean, we need to have something in place.
Okay. All yours.
Okay. Well, I really actually don't have much of an update. Most of my stuff, I think we already talked about. I just had the entry-level list provided and the lateral score. So these have been updated today, and you guys can take a look at them. We only have 8 laterals, and there's 114 entry-level. So... we've got that. Also, I emailed out an updated roster. Kathy had changed her email, so I have some printed copies for everybody as well. So please, again, make sure that you use, get some momentum going, please. Use the updated email for Kathy, not the one that was previously provided. So that is that. And then I already handed out the updated police org chart, so we don't need to discuss that. So really, all of my items, all the remaining items that I have are just the testing materials that we can discuss in a
second. Okay, good. So that takes us to executive session. And now I think the only thing we were going to come back to was just setting the date and interview processes. I don't know if you want to come back to that one.
It's up to you. I mean, do I stick around for the executive session?
No, no. The executive session will just be
okay. So you want to do the date now, or you want to say you want to do it?
You know what? Just to save the time coming back, we'll vet the questions and see if we can do it. If you can come up with what would be your preference for a date, we can entertain that when we come back to the item and save you the return trip.
Okay. If you want to contact me, or however you want to do that.
Yeah, or I mean, if we can also, if you don't want to, like, we can vet the questions and go through this, and if we can shoot for an oral date that is after May 13th as well, and that would alleviate the issue of having to vet the questions and set the date tonight.
I'm willing to do whatever you want me to do.
Okay.
Do
you want to come back in 20 minutes?
Sure,
I don't think hopefully shouldn't take longer.
Yeah,
than
I'll do that. Correct me wrong, but we really want to try and get you the earliest interview dates we can.
I will hang out here on a computer and get some work done and let me know.
Why don't you temp fast in the doctor's
for my heel? Thanks.
And does anyone need to take a break before we
begin
the session?
Yeah.
Okay. It's 5:37. Let's take a 5-minute break. Okay, we're set. Okay, now 5:42. We are back on the record and taking a recess to engage in executive session.
And state the reason why. Qualification for.
To review. Qualifications of applicant for employment.
Oh,
I think I ought to go on 15
minutes. Actually, I do. I conduct a lot of business. I never wasted a second. So,
but no, what I did not want to do is approve questions next month and then delay the whole thing for 4 weeks. So. I think we came up with something that...
I know you are. Thank you.
We'll get your vacancies filled 4 weeks soon.
Good. Perfect.
Okay, are we back on the recorder?
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
Ready to go.
Time is now 6:39. We are back in session following executive session. At this point in the process, I would like to entertain a motion to approve the selection of questions for police senior clerk as discussed in executive session.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Hearing no nays, the motion is approved. We'd next like to entertain a motion to approve the interview questions for entry-level police officer as discussed in executive session.
Second.
As amended? Thank you.
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. No nays. The motion is approved. I'd also like to entertain a motion to approve the selection of interview questions for a lateral entrant police officer, as amended.
So
moved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Hearing no nays, the motion is carried. Okay. Chief, while we were in executive session, we did review all of the test questions for the positions. The minor changes were made, and the number of questions was narrowed for the lateral entrant. At this point, I think the best course of action is to set a date for the interviews for both lateral and for new hire, with the intent of producing a list of three names for each category for your consideration. And in light of the vacancies and your staffing situation, to do that as quickly as possible. So with that, what are your recommendations for dates for the interviews, realizing you'll be supplying one interview panel member and obtaining the outside agency member?
Well, if we look at the dates, so the calendar, again, May 13th would be our next regular meeting. So if we want to have the interviews before that, it's probably not feasible to do them any earlier than April, say 28th, 29th. So the last week of April would be the soonest that we could do them. And I would say we wouldn't really want to do them any later than the 7th to give time to kind of get everything prepared, put the list together, and certify the, basically so that we can certify the scores on the 13th. So I would think that we can, you know, we'd be able to get the availability for if we, I feel like with that much note, with as much notice as we have, we would be able to get an officer or two officers and the panelists. So if we want to determine, I don't know what date, I can make any of those and I will make any of those work. So we would basically need two separate dates. So I don't know if you want to do them, you know, the 28th, 29th, which would be a Monday and a Tuesday. It may be better to do the 29th and the 30th. Sometimes Mondays are difficult for people.
Now, well, are there any one day or 2 days for the new applicants?
Well, we would need, I guess it depends on how many people you want to interview.
Multiple panels?
I'm sorry?
I think we're probably going to be looking at multiple days or multiple panels.
Well, how many candidates do you want to interview for the... For the laterals, we have 8 candidates, so that's one day of interviews. It depends on how many.
Yeah, it's the new hires I'm concerned about.
And again, generally, it would be, you would do, I feel like the normal course would be to do 8 interviews. We can certify a list of 3, and if for some reason, I mean, that still gives us, if the top 3, for whatever reason, are horrible and the case throws them out, we still have, there's still 3 more on that list that can go forward, really 4 more. And so at that point, if then we end up throwing those out, we can then interview, we can set another, you know.
There's fewer than 5 percentage points separating the top 8 applicants on the written score. And actually, some of these have fallen off already.
All the scores on here are still valid. There shouldn't be, the ones that fall off are no longer on the list.
Number 5 looks like they're going to fall off before we can do anything.
Soon, yeah, there might be some that fall off soon, but they won't, like, if they're on here, then the score is still current.
Okay, so, I would like to do more than 8 for the entry level, just given the score breakdown and the number of folks here. How difficult would it be to do 2 panels for 2 days?
Okay.
I think if we do 16, even if we do 16, we're only dropping less than 1 percentage point on the written score. And 16 is probably about the maximum I think we can handle.
Can I just comment on that?
Sure.
My only thing about that is the chances that I'm going to go beyond 8 people, I think, are pretty unlikely. I just don't want to see you all that.
No,
far.
No.
If you have an 8 on that list, the chances of me getting through all 8 before they expire is probably.
Oh, no.
So if you did 8 of each,
No, it's a question of qualifier. It's, you know, we've got over 180. But the point is, we have 100 people that applied, and our top eight are like in this much of the written band. So if we just these folks, this guy here may be awesome. He's not that far behind these guys, but we'll never know it if we don't interview him.
Yeah, that's true.
But you're
how
still
far
never
going
to get to him. I'm never going to get past eight. I mean, I can't imagine me getting past
people. Let's say number 20 on this list. If he gives us an awesome oral, you can make the top three. So number 20 on the written test.
Based on just logistics, I feel like going more than one day of interviews is kind of overshooting.
And I think there's always the option to do another, like, if the point is that we want to get an eligible list to the chief, we can do one day of interviews. We have a lot of interviews coming up, so that's already 3 days with the police clerk, the entry, and the lateral. We can always move into the next month. If we want to really fill up our list, we can certainly do another round of interviews the following month if you really want to get a broader, you know,
Yeah, but you're looking at less than a point separating and a 60-40 split between oral and interview. Yeah, number 20 on the written test could turn out number one on the list.
I think we make it too complicated. We have two positions open. We interview eight laterals. We interview the top eight here. That's 16 interviews, and you're going to choose two out of them. I mean, we could go down here. We could do all those what ifs, but I think we've got to make it expedient. We've got to get it done. And I think if we've got eight in each category, we're in good shape.
If we do 16 on the new list, you know, we're doing 2 days of interviews.
But now we're talking
I'd say just do eight.
I'd say just do eight. Because you have to draw a line somewhere.
Yeah.
And you're drawing line eight or drawing line 16.
Eight it is. I'm not voted. We're a commission. So
you can say I told you so.
No, it's just, again, I definitely want to get the best, and there's not much of a point spread here. If there were a bigger point spread, then it would make a lot of sense.
But you know the other point of that, Rich, that means if number 20 ends up being number one, I'll bet his point spread between those other seven is pretty slight, too.
Yeah.
So when you're all said and done?
You can make up a point in an oral.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So you may only be a point different anyway.
But our members have made their views known. So three days of interviews for the three positions. I'll read our dates.
So again, the next meeting is the 13th. We've got the senior police clerk is on the 6th, May 6th. So we could really run a gauntlet. We could hold the clerk interviews on the 6th, and we could do entry level on the 7th and laterals on the 8th. That's kind of pushing it a little bit, but I mean.
Well, you're.
Is there a problem with that?
I guess I feel it's going to be that's a lot of interviews to do, but I mean, might as well get it done.
Yeah, you're the staff person making it happen, and you're supplying.
I'm only supplying one officer on the board, right?
Yes.
Well, but you're also drafting the outside agency, aren't you?
Right.
Would April be better for you?
But we have to set an exact date tonight, right?
I think so.
Yeah. They've got to make the phone call.
Then whatever you decide, I think. Whatever's best.
Whenever, I think it's whatever works best for you, because you'll have the greatest interest here.
Probably have a better chance of getting those outside individuals.
Yeah, and that's why I was just okay. So I feel like the 8th, if that's the last day of interviews, would still be enough time to compile all the information.
Okay.
Can we move it?
Yeah, so I would do, the 6th is already set, so if you want to do the 7th and 8th,
Okay, entertain a motion.
Let me check something. I don't need to be involved.
No, you will not be involved.
So it doesn't matter.
It'll
to me.
Just be whoever you determine.
And I'll make
and
that happen.
And Lieutenant Jensen's already available for the 6th. So the 6th is already set. We don't need to deal with the 6th. That's the senior police clerk one we've already taken. So it would be the 7th and 8th. 7th for lateral, 8th for entry, or vice versa.
Entertain a motion.
I move to use the dates May 6th, 7th, and 8th as our testing, our oral dates.
I mean, 7th and 8th for lateral, because we already have the 6th done.
Yeah, the 6th is done. Yeah.
Second.
All opposed? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Hearing none opposed, motion carries. That concludes the agenda business, and entertain a motion to adjourn.
I move we adjourn.
I second.
And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. We're adjourned.